Hi, I'm Greg Simpson, partner at Mazars in the UK, head of the banking team. In today's podcast, we're going to give an overview of the regulatory developments over the next 12 to 18 months. And with me today, I've got two of our specialists in our regulatory advisory team. I have Audrey Cochet, who's come all the way from our Paris office.
Greg, it's great to be here.
Thank you. It's great to have you. And we've also got Pauline Pellissier, who is actually in our London office.
Hi, Greg. Thank you for inviting me.
So in this podcast, we're going to cover a few topics. First of all, a brief summary of the regulatory outlook. We're going to talk a little bit about IFRS 9 and in the context of regulatory treatments. Linking to that is also credit risk management and non-performing loans. And finally, we will touch on CRD 5 and CRR 2. So Audrey, maybe moving to you first, can you give me a summary of the key things which came out of the regulatory outlook for 2017-18? I know one of the things that you talked about was risk management, but so maybe you can expand a little bit more about that, please.
So in terms of risk management, I think that we can retain three main ideas. The first one is about governance and the fact that banks really need to implement sound and robust governance and IT systems, for example, and we can cite the example of IFRS 9. The second point is about the SREP, so that is the process that has been implemented for Pillar 2 for the biggest banks in Europe.
And SREP stands for?
So it is for a supervisory review and evaluation process. Mm-hmm. And so today, the less significant institutions don't have to implement such process. They have to implement ICAAP and ILAAP, but tomorrow they will have to implement the SREP as well. So it means that they will be judged on the business activity and on internal control and governance. And the last point is about outsourcing and the fact that there will be a lot of outsourcing activity in the future, and it could be one of the main vulnerabilities for Europe.
Okay. And outsourcing, of course, is a good point and links very closely to a recent podcast we did on cybersecurity, and in particular how banks are monitoring how the outsourced providers are managing data appropriately. That covers risk management. Thank you for that. Can we move maybe on to IFRS 9? Again, a topic which is very close to me from an accounting point of view, but from the regulator's perspective, I know the EBA issued their second impact assessment on IFRS 9 very recently. And whilst I understand the population of banks that they surveyed was about 50 or so across Europe, it didn't really focus very much on the smaller banks, and particularly the overseas and challenger banks that we deal with here in the UK. Maybe you can highlight some of the key points which came out of that survey, which we can share.
Yeah, so we can say that finally the impact of the new IFRS 9 implement is not so huge as expected before, uh-huh, compared to the first impact assessment disclosed in November 2016. But finally, for smaller banks that are not directly included in the sample of the second impact assessment, it could be really tricky in terms of governance, because IFRS 9 means a lot of adjustments because they don't have IRB models from, mm-hmm, the regulatory point of view. So finally, such banks that use generally standardized approach in credit risk have to implement specific IT systems or made a lot of adjustments to be compliant with IFRS 9 standards.
And certainly the output from the survey, as you say, the impact on impairment provisions is probably not as big as what could have been anticipated originally. However, the challenge, particularly for smaller banks, is where they don't have, or they have less sophisticated credit risk models, I think is the point. How are they implementing that from an accounting point of view, and also where they're not, when they're used to using a standard credit risk approach from a regulatory perspective, again, that poses more challenges. And I think the point you made there was, however you implement this, you need to have an effective and strong governance process to make sure it's getting led by the appropriate seniority within the organisation. One of the things we talked about also was the phasing of the impact. And this is something which I've thought about. You know, banks are not changing their models, sorry, their business practices from an accounting standard. The risks that they face today are the same risks that they face tomorrow. However, when you implement IFRS 9, overnight there will be a significant charge and decrease on capital. How is that charge and the decrease in capital being treated from a regulatory perspective, Audrey?
The EU Council has recently proposed an amendment to the article of the CRR2 dedicated to the implementation of IFRS 9. So now we know that there will be two impacts to take into account in the phasing arrangements. The first one is for the first time application. You need to compare your situation before IFRS 9 and after the implementation of IFRS 9. And if the impact is negative on your CET1 capital, you will have the possibility, it's not compulsory, it's a possibility to lessen the impact in your capital ratio and in your leverage ratio as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a five-year phasing arrangement, and you will have to disclose this impact in your Pillar 3 disclosures as well.
So from what I understand, the overnight impact is basically the static approach. So once you've calculated the IFRS 9 impact, that immediate write-down, the impact on capital can be phased over 5 years on a step basis. So for example, in the first year, the deduction is
5%,
and that goes all the way down to 100% until year 5.
But it's not only a static approach, because finally, if at the reporting date in the future, you have an increase of more than 20% compared to the first time application, you can take into account this impact in the phasing arrangement.
Okay, oh, that's interesting. The other thing which I saw from the study was the EBA's guidelines on treating all stages of provisions as specific. Maybe you can just expand a little bit about what that means from a regulatory point of view.
For a standardized approach in credit risk, it's very, very important, because you don't have the same treatment for general and specific provisioning. For general provision, you can add a part in your Tier 2 capital compared to specific provisions that you have to deduct in your gross exposure, so finally in the calculation of the RWA.
Okay.
So it's really, really important. But it's an opinion from the EBA, so it's not compulsory by nature.
it still needs to be confirmed.
Yeah.
Thank you, Audrey. Pauline, maybe moving to you. Credit risk management. I understand the EBA recently issued the final guidelines on credit risk management. Maybe you can highlight what the key aspects of that guidelines are, please.
Yeah, sure. What I would like to highlight first is that this guidance is a strong signal for a continued convergence or at least consistency between regulatory and accounting standards. As an example, there's a whole part dedicated to IFRS 9 in the EBA guidance. What must be remembered is that according to this guidance, credit risk assessment process so must be consistent. For example, the definition of default should be the same or at least consistent between the regulatory definition and the accounting definition. And the credit risk assessment process should be both reactive and anticipative, which means that you will need to have a combination of forward-looking and historical data. So I guess that once again, everything linked to data and information system will be the main concern for mm-hmm. banks.
So from what I understand, the guidelines don't tell you what the credit provision should be, but define how to develop the framework for maintaining a consistent approach to measuring credit risk, ensuring that you can anticipate future events and build them into your model, and also be able to react to new scenarios as they come promptly and deal with that in your models as well.
Exactly. You have to incorporate all new information in a timely manner, and temporary adjustment are authorized, but provided that they are duly documented and remains temporary.
Mm-hmm. And those guidelines, as well as the second impact assessment, are both available on the EBA website, aren't they?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, maybe we move on to non-performing loans. I understand that this remains one of the key priorities of the European Central Bank, and whilst the UK is not within the remit of the ECB, and indeed NPLs are not as high in the UK as they are in other places within mainland Europe, I understand it is still an area of focus, and particularly as interest rates will start to rise, how NPLs are going to react with an increase in interest rate environment going forwards. Pauline, maybe you can highlight the key points from this area.
So, as you said, Grace, that the NPL ratio is very different across the countries. So, for example, in the European area, it goes from 1% to almost 47%. So it's a widespread, I would say. Mm-hmm. The main problem with NPL is that they cause harm in the profitability of banks, in the capital strength, but also in the funding ability. And in the long term, it will harm the real economy and the ability of banks to lend money, basically. Mm-hmm. So one of the next steps for the NPL management, of course, is the final guidance that has been issued and that promotes a strong strategy and governance for NPLs. But of course, there are also other developments that are expected by the summer 2018, such as a European approach to foster the development of a secondary market for NPLs.
So a secondary market, can you give me an example about what banks are currently doing on that?
So for example, we can take the example of Italian banks that have recently sold portfolios of bad loans through securitizations. And we also know that there is a willingness of the European institutions to implement the Capital Markets Union from 2019, and so finally to foster securitizations in Europe as well.
Okay. Finally, let's talk briefly about CRD5 and CRR2, maybe coming back to you, Audrey. Firstly, can you clarify, when is it due to be implemented?
So, if we take the general rule, we know that for CRD5 and CRR2, the implementation date cannot be before January 2019, because we need 2 years between the proposal of the EU Commission and the vote of the EU Parliament, except for two regulations that are the leverage ratio and the NSFR, for which there is a fast process in Europe, and they could be implemented from January 2018.
Okay, and what are the latest developments?
So there are a lot of developments for every Basel pillars, but I think that we really need to emphasize on the pillar one, because there is a development of credit risk, for example, the supporting factor for small enterprises. And we can also cite the implementation of leverage ratio and NSFR into Pillar 1, because they already exist, but finally they are only observational ratio for the moment. And I think that the main point is on Pillar 2, because there is an increase in supervisory measures. And today, we need to know that if we want to be compliant with the Pillar 2 add-on imposed by the EU supervisor, you can only use your CET1 capital. But thanks to the CRD5, it could be possible in the future to use all types of capital to be compliant. So
does that mean that there's a deterioration in the quality of capital that will be used?
Yeah, that's what Daniel Nui has said recently. And so I think that if the ECB has reacted over such measure, it means that it is important to follow in the future.
Well, thank you, Audrey, and thank you, Pauline. I think that the main thing I take away from this is that there continues to be lots of work in the regulatory space, and the regulators in Europe and in the UK continue to push for change, and this will affect all the banks that we deal with in the UK and across Europe. So thank you once more. If you have any further questions, please feel free to contact us. You will be able to see the slides and get them from our website. Thank you for listening.